Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Getaway Friday, August the 26th, 2022. 15 minutes past the hour, and it is the last Friday in the month of August. Now, hour number one here this morning, we have a guest who I have wanted to have on for quite a while, and you may have heard his story just 45 minutes up the road in Columbus. It has been on all the local media in Columbus throughout this summer. I believe the news channels in Columbus have done stories on it, as well as the Columbus Dispatch. So we're going to get a firsthand look here at this man's life and how he got to where he got and what makes it such an interesting story. The guest this morning is Reverend Douglas Grace. Now, why is this an interesting story? Well, here is the catch. He is the first openly gay pastor in Pickerington at the Prince of Peace Presbyterian Church. Interesting. Let's learn all about it from our guest this morning, welcoming him to the microphones for the first time, but hopefully not the last, the Reverend Douglas Grace. Reverend, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good to talk with you here on a Friday morning. Now, when I say, and when people hear openly gay pastor, first openly gay pastor in Pickerington, what do you think people think when they first hear that?
Well, I assume they might question a little bit, or that it catches you back. And I'll say it's not just Pickerington; it's the first openly gay Presbyterian pastor in all of Greater Columbus, and the very first gay pastor coming out of I'm coming out of Licking County, and so the very first person out of Licking County. So. It's a little bit bigger than that, but my congregation that I'm serving just happens to be in Pickerington, which is a wonderful congregation that I invite everyone to. And I, you know, I think in this dynamic that we're living in this culture, that so much of LGBTQ rights have moved forward and acceptance, and but there's still always been this a little concern or question that you know. Where does my Christian faith fit into this? And an understanding of where this goes. And, you know, I think what the attention that has been around my ordination has been, you know, really questioning that faith, it's not an antithesis, right? It's not antithetical that being a person of faith and being homosexual is, you know, opposite of each other. In fact, it's one brought the other out of the closet, if you will.
And that, I think, is what's interesting to a lot of people. And it's fascinating. First openly gay pastor in the greater Columbus area. Now, are there other, because we don't hear a lot of this, openly gay pastors in Ohio?
Yes. In fact, one of my Presbyterian colleagues, the Reverend Mark Parsons, is down in Gallipolis. And he was out of what in our jurisdiction that we call it here in Middle Ohio, which is called the Presbyterian Scioto Valley. He was the very first person that we can document historically as the openly gay person that was ordained down in Gallipolis out of this presbytery, this region. I happen to be the first in Greater Columbus, and especially coming out of Licking County. And so that's kind of the uniqueness. So there are other people there. Now, in other denominations, like the United Church of Christ and the Episcopal Church, who advanced before the Presbyterians about, you know, on accepting openly gay people to be ordained, I can't speak for them because I just do not know the numbers. I'm sure there's probably you know, some other people in the state that out of those denominations. And certainly it's not to say that LGBTQ people have not been ordained in the past, but they haven't been open about it. And so that's perhaps the difference is that, you know, I'm, and Mark before me have been very clear and very upfront through our examination process and through the vote of the church, you know, to move us forward is that this is exactly, you know, we're very upfront. And that's part of my faith is to be orthodox to the church and to be open and honest. And I think that's part of this story is a willingness to, you know, to be honest and the importance of that.
Let's start from the beginning here, because I would guess there are a lot of people listening to this program this morning who certainly have heard Presbyterian, but have no idea what the tenets are of that particular section of religion. To you, what is a Presbyterian?
Well, a Presbyterian is someone who comes out of what we call the Calvinistic tradition. John Calvin was a French pastor that during the Reformation 500 years ago and, you know, came out of France and went to Switzerland, Geneva, and founded, kind of a new arm of Christianity, just like John Wesley did with the Methodists and, of course, Martin Luther. We know with Lutherans out of the Germans. And then that advanced into one of his students, John Knox, then in Scotland, which founded then really the Presbyterian movement. And so part of that movement is somewhat congregational-based in terms of that it's an understanding of the equal participation of, amongst what we call teaching elders. That's the pastor, the clergy, the minister of the word and sacrament, and ruling elders. Those are the lay people that are what we call session or the council of the church, and that we work together, you know, to decide the faith and formation of the congregation and the ministry directions and all those kinds of things. And then we set up a structure between the congregation and then what we call presbytery. If you want to think about that as a county government, you know, over all the congregations. And then we have a synod, which think about that as a state government. And then we have a general assembly, which is the national structure of the church. It sounds very similar to our American government. That's because our American government was developed through the Calvinistic perspective. People don't always necessarily realize that John Witherspoon, who was a famous historical American Presbyterian, founder of Princeton University and Princeton Seminary, was the only clergy that signed the Declaration of Independence. And so out of this tradition are the Presbyterians. So much of it's about form of government and the way that we structure ourselves, that people, the clergy along with the laity have, you know, a shared responsibility and leadership. A little bit different than the structures where there's bishops and, you know, that set the agenda, which is kind of more on a hierarchical kingdom-based system where we are more of a democratic system. And then theologically, what's important to us is the understanding that God's grace is always before you and is always there, God's grace and love. And part of our tradition is opening your eyes to that reality that grace is before you. And then because we're in so in love with God and so thankful for that grace, there's nothing else that we can do than to respond in humility and purity and in mission for what Christ has called us to do, you know, taking care of the least of these, the poor, the orphan, the imprisoned. So it has both this grace perspective of accepting yourself for who you are and how God made you to be. And once you get to that place, you understand that grace and that you're a forgiven person, then moving into action and, taking that love of Christ and sharing that with the world. And that's transformative, and that's what a Presbyterian's all about.
Now, for people listening right now, is this close to Catholicism? Is it close to Christianity? Is it close to Methodist? Where does it fall closest to?
Well, it falls closest to Christ, I think.
But wouldn't all religions say that? Well, pretty much.
true, but we have an initiative going on in our denomination right now. It's called Matthew 25, and it really goes back to really trying to understand what that first century church was really about. You know, following Christ's death and resurrection, and then the ministry of St. Peter and Apostle Paul, you know, moving out and amongst the disciples, particularly Paul, and establishing these assemblies. What were those assemblies really all about? Long before we got into all of the hierarchical structures and dividing ourselves up amongst denominations, but really looking at what we are called to do. And Matthew 25 happens to be, you know, the basis of what Jesus said, you know, about loving one another. And, you know, when in the Christ, when we see, well, you know, you saw me when you visited the poor, when you saw the homeless, when you saw the person in prison, when you, you know, that's kind of the mission. And so all this other kind of thing, you know, dividing us into, I don't know, our culture is just so into wanting to divide us into camps these days. And what we're trying to say is, you know, stop doing that. We are all one. So what are we closest to? I mean, well, I mean, there we have very much connections with our Catholic brothers and sisters, and strong connections with our Methodist brothers and sisters. And so Presbyterians are people who are what we call ecumenical and interfaith. We also see connections with our brothers and sisters who are Muslim and Buddhists and, you know, Hindu. And there's connections in there in that humanity place. And so that is our Christian identity and the witness of Christ, is to say that God is the one for the love of all. I take it back to very often that very first covenant. The very first covenant that God ever made with humanity was with Noah after the flood. And after all was destroyed, and there was just, you know, one humanity raced back, and God said, this is the covenant I make between me and you and every living creature. Well, you know, if we take that serious, that's the first covenant that God has ever made with humanity, then what does that say to us about a world population? And then you can take that all the way down to a national population, state population, a community, a congregation, and then to ourselves and our families. But we are all one. And that covenant is there. So that's really part of what my message I want to bring. No matter what, that God's grace is before you, forgiveness is before you, and once you feel that and recognize that, the Spirit moves you into action of oneness.
I can hear people listening this morning, because this is probably the meat and potatoes of this whole story, is when they hear first openly gay pastor, they are thinking, because we hear this, being a part of the Bible Belt here in most of Ohio, we hear during elections and at other times that man should not lay down with man. People will say that's in the Bible. They will say that's a sin. They will say the same thing about abortion. Those seem to be the two big ones that you hear about during election time or things that come out of the church, that you cannot be gay and you cannot be have an abortion. Those are the two big issues. So people are probably wondering, how do we get an openly gay pastor? So from somebody who studied the Bible, from somebody who's a pastor, how is it okay to be gay and a pastor for people listening who might have that question?
Well, I mean, that's a very good piece, and certainly the Columbus Dispatch, the editorial board piece that they included me in, certainly kind of brought that to attention because of the growth that's going to happen in Ohio with Intel coming, and, you know, just the ongoing growth. And what is it about when we have legislators that, you know, focus on abortion and anti-LGBTQ rights and anti-Black Lives Matter rights? That was their piece. And how are we going to be welcoming to people? And maybe that's a great place to start, is that, you know, Jesus was welcoming of all. And, you know, Jesus made it very clear that with all these rules and regulations, and that you want to look at, that you can pull anything out of the Bible. I mean, the Bible also says that a father should sell her daughter into slavery in Leviticus. Well, do we follow that? And so you have to raise, I mean, there's all kinds of things in there. That you can pull, you can proof text anything you want and to find it to justify your political opinion. And so, but Jesus says, I can summarize the law, all of the law and the prophets in one verse, which is two laws. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, on these two commandments, hang all the law and the prophets. And then we say liturgically, since you've been reconciled to God through Jesus Christ, let us be reconciled with each other. May the peace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with you all. That's the crux of what Jesus was saying. So if you want to be a Jesus, a biblical Jesus lover, and a one who loves God through Jesus, that's the point. And Jesus has made it clear, you know, judgment and all those kinds of things are up to God. You don't need to take on God. And in some ways, that's the abomination, is that when you like to think that we know what God says. I think of the protesters that have gone on that Westboro Baptist Church, you know, that God hates fags. You know, that's what their sign will say. That's a complete, that's the abomination to actually write that, that you know what God hates. And, you know, in our Reformed tradition, which is Presbyterians, we call it Reformed theology, it's Reformed and reforming. We're constantly reforming our understanding of what Scripture says based upon reason, the knowledge that we have today, the knowledge that we now have around reproductive choice and reproductive rights, now that we know around issues around just genetics with LGBTQ. I mean, there's just so many things that we learn, and so you reform your understanding, but it's always based on scriptural love of what Jesus talked about. And just a couple things to point out in terms of the abortion debate. Everybody has mixed feelings about that, and certainly as a pastor, I'm not one to be out promoting abortions, not at all. But I also am not a woman, and so I don't know what goes on completely in that journey that they are on, what their experience has been. But what I do know is that the story of the creation of Adam back in the garden was God, you know, created Adam out of the dust, and once that creation was done and that body was able to accept the spirit, that spirit of God to come in, then God blew the into his nostrils and blew life into him, once the body was able to be out and was created out on its own. So I just offer that as something to reflect upon and think about, is that's when everything was set and good with the body of Abraham out of the dust, then God blew life into, and the spirit came into, and life came into Adam. In terms of LGBTQ, I think that God has made us to see who we are. And, you know, we can proof text, and we could spend hours, I could do Bible studies on what the text is actually saying about man shall not lie down with other man. That is so out of context of what was actually being said, what the Apostle Paul said in the opening of Romans when he's talking about that. He was speaking to the Romans as the emperor of the Roman Empire was parading around a young boy in a wedding dress and making him his wife. That's what the Apostle Paul was talking about. That's the abomination. It's the, you know, it was the abusiveness of an adult with a minor. That's what he's talking about in that regards. But, you know, that's a longer story and Bible study. And some of the things I get frustrated with when people read the text, and particularly in the English, various English versions, which are not necessarily accurate to the original text in Greek, and don't understand the context of what was being said. We always have to think about, well, what was being said then? And you have to do a little research. You have to do some understanding of what it said then, and then how do you apply it to what it means now in our current context. And so that's part of the challenge.
It's very interesting. I've heard this a lot, that the Bible is up for interpretation. And if it is up for interpretation in regard to LGBTQ, same-sex marriage, when it does come to abortion, would you consider yourself pro-choice or pro-life?
Both, quite frankly. I think that's even kind of a Pauline, Pauline response to that. It's both. Again, instead of putting it into this binary of me against the other opinion, it's really both. Of course I'm pro-life, but I'm also pro-choice at the same time, because, I mean, I don't completely know the context of the individual situation that we're talking about. Do I think that, abortion should be used, for, just as birth control and that kind of thing? No, of course not. But if a situation happens, then we have to evaluate it. What is the best for the situation? And that can only come between, a woman, her God, and her doctor. Whatever that context is. And I would, as a pastor, I would then encourage, if someone, a woman came to me and wanted to talk about that, I would not give my opinion, and I would try to encourage, the counsel, her to counsel with, in prayer, and with her doctors, and, really come to a place that's what is fitting for the situation, based upon health concerns, could be based upon age, could be based upon rape and incest. I mean, it's just all kinds of things that factor into that. And then to really take a good look at your life and what your situation is and where that spiritual journey is taking to you. And God will be with you. I mean, I really believe that. So.
Well, I think that becomes the ultimate question. It's not so much about is it politically right, politically wrong, what church believes what. It is, in your opinion, on these two big issues, same-sex marriage, being gay, abortion, in your opinion, because I think the fear is that if I get an abortion, if I am gay, I will go to hell. There are two places I can go when I die here, and these are choices I make in this life, and these are the two you hear about the most when it comes to the church. So I guess my question to you would be, in your opinion, not what you would counsel somebody, not where you fall politically, but just in general, do you believe somebody who has an abortion, do you believe somebody who is gay goes to hell?
No, they're in hell. This is one of the biggest incorrections that people have, and it goes back to almost Greek and Roman mythology, right? That there's Hades and the hell and all kind of Hades in New Testament biblical meant it was an actual place. It was outside of the walls of a city, outside of the walls of Jerusalem, and that's where they dumped their trash. And Hades then is where they also dumped the corpses of bodies that were crucified. It was also a place where lepers had to live because they weren't welcomed in the city walls, and they scavengered, and homeless people scavengered for food. And it was a burning place. If you've ever been to a trash pit, they burn. And so it was a physical place. It's not cosmic. And so then you can put that into a mental state of that, when you're wrestling with this and that guilt that you live with, if you have had an abortion, and so many gay people live with this guilt based upon an upbringing that perhaps had a religious upbringing that, was very judgmental. In human terms, not God's terms, but in human terms. And so you live with that guilt. Part of our Presbyterian worship service is what we call the confession of sin. And so you come in and you confess that sin exists. It's not your personal sins, but this concept of sin exists. And we let it go. And I remind people about the baptismal font. You let it go. You try to work to let it go. And so that's where the grace comes in. and that God is forever working on you and everybody else, even in life and in death. The word judgment, God's judgment in theology, does not mean punishment. It means making everything right. So it's a constant, you see, a constant understanding and in theological evolution of your life that God is always trying to make it right. So even in death, we say, doesn't mean that you have, it's all ended, and so now you're standing there, and some are going to go downstairs, and some are going to go upstairs. No. It's that God is continually ever making it right, even in death, that eternal life. God is still working with your soul, that you are a soul. Your body is a body. Your soul is your soul, and it which continues to move forward, even after death. And see, when you begin to understand that, then these issues around judgment and who's going to go to hell and who's going to go to heaven. Well, I've been in hell. I went through that struggle. Anybody that has been in a struggle personally, perhaps in the breakup of a marriage, perhaps in a diagnosis of a health disease or an issue with career, I mean, finances, I mean, that's the hell that we live in. And that's the peace of the grace that God gives us when we come and receive that great grace and we receive it and hear it. See, then you move into a place of love and joy and harmony and eternal life.
The only political question I have in this interview is just mainly because of the times, because we do have a gubernatorial election coming up in just a few months here, and it seems as if the Democrats, and it doesn't seem as if, it is as if, the Democrats in this case, which would be Nan Whaley, they believe in pro-choice, and that's going to be an issue a lot of people feel when people go to the polls, and also believe in LGBTQ rights. Our current governor, who's the Republican nominee, tends not to believe that so much. Now, he's not an extremist, I think, on those things, but tends to believe that in a different way. And it's very interesting because church crowds of all faiths tend to be older crowds, and I have seen this, I'm sure you have seen this, where reverends, pastors, fathers get up and basically tell people who the candidate to vote for is, and a lot of times Democrats feel they have lost that vote because of the stances they take on those two issues. In the upcoming election, who do you support for governor?
Well, I haven't really made up my mind. I've been kind of busy here. I think Nan Whaley is quite an exciting and interesting candidate. I need to, quite frankly, I need to research a little bit more about her. I just saw a poll yesterday that they're neck and neck in terms of the polling, and so I didn't quite realize that. Governor DeWine, I say Senator because I've worked with him when I was in Washington as Senator, and I know him, and I think he's a good man, and I think he has, served our state well. I think it sounds like to me, I can't say that I know this, that he does, he's a faithful Catholic, and, that the bishops have been very clear in this diocese, Catholic diocese, and our bishop is conservative, and so I know, I'm sure he wrestles with that, and I encourage him to keep doing that and living out his faith. But I think he does, though, I think try to hold that back. However, he did sign the abortion ban bill, what was that, 10 years ago, which now comes into effect in Ohio since the Supreme Court debate. So, I'll leave that to the voters to decide, what they think about that. As I said, I'm pro-life and pro-choice. And so my political hat has to remain in, well, first encouraging, say, my congregants and my people that I serve, that this is their decision. I want them to wrestle with it. But at the same time, the policy of the Presbyterian Church, I'm upheld to communicate, and is, to be on the side of pro-choice. That is our Presbyterian policy. So that while there are Presbyterians who have different opinions in terms of abortion, though the government should not come down and side on one of those sides. And so it's just basically to stay out of it. Now, ultimately, that becomes a pro-choice position, right? But it's really calling on the government to stay out of that kind of thing. Regulate things for proper medical care, of course. Keeping to, letting that be between a woman, her God, and her doctor, kinds of things.
That being said, at this time, would you say you are leaning more toward Nan Whaley because of that?
No, I can't say that at this point. There's other things, other issues that concern me. Of course, LGBTQ rights are one of those, but Governor DeWine's been pretty supportive of LGBTQ rights, and so I, want to laud him on that and support of him on and recognize him on that. Nan Whaley is certainly you're right there as well. So then comes, I think, some of the other issues that come to this. I do sense watching. I watch CNN and Fox and MSNBC. You can see where abortion is being played as a a social issue that's going to bring people to the polls. And that's okay, but I hope people are looking at even bigger issues around, what's going on in terms of our environment and climate change, and now with Intel coming and gentrification issues and housing issues and homeless issues and economic issues and there's just so many things that need to have a strong look at. But there is something basic about I think that's tapping people in terms of the abortion issue is, is one, people who feel very solidly about protecting what they see as protecting life, and others that really feel strongly about protecting kind of civil human rights, as part of that. And so that's where the tension is, and we'll see how this plays out. But I hope at some point this doesn't further divide our families, our friends, our churches, that somehow we figure out how the political machine uses this to divide us. I would hope that the church, and certainly from my pulpit, you're going to hear about we've got to come together as one and not be divided. That's who we are as Christians, are to be one.
In our remaining... go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we sing that hymn, they'll know we are Christians by our love, yes, they'll know we are Christians by our love. That's one of my favorite hymns, and that's really what it comes down to, is living out of a place of love that then brings forth peace and justice and harmony.
In our final 13 minutes here, I want to come back to your personal life, because there has long been a debate. Are you born gay, or do your circumstance, your environment, make you gay? When did you know, when was the moment when you realized that you were gay, and do you believe it's environmental, or you are born that way?
Probably when I was a kid and I... A young boy, and I was much more interested in my G.I. Joe doll than I was my sister's Barbie doll, okay? So, you better believe it was right from the very beginning. Now, I grew up in a culture in Coshocton, Ohio, and in an era and a time and in a family where, homosexuality was not understood, and it was somewhat shameful. Kind of grew up in that assumption that, a guy dates a girl, you go to the homecoming, you go to the prom, football, cheerleader, all that kind of stuff. And then, I went off to college at Bowling Green, was in my fraternity, again, same kind of a concept. I had married my sorority sweetheart, who I loved dearly and still in great contact with. It was finally through... but it was always in the back of my head. I always knew. I kept thinking, what am I doing? But it was such a cultural taboo that, people fall into that tabooism, and that's where the mental health issues come in. That's where the hell is when you're constantly in this cycle of questioning yourself, and is this right or wrong, or oh my gosh, I don't even know who to talk to about this. That's some of the reasons why, you know, today some of the programs that are in our school systems and for young people that can help them, guide them through this. And then the idea that even H.R. 6, you know, that's before our state legislature, you know, you can't stay gay in school. I mean, that's how horrible. You're just shoving people back down into the closet and into denial, into mental health issues. And so it was, for me, it was finally, after I began working for the church, at 25, out of our Presbyterian Washington office, I was at a conference at one of our retreat centers in Montreat, North Carolina, and it was Bishop Leontine Kelly that from the United Methodist Church that was the guest speaker at a peacemaking conference. And I was a staff person working behind the scenes and working with her, and got to know her as a result of that. And she said to me, after she preached a great sermon and used the great hymn, How Firm a Foundation, and talked about that that hymn, and she said to me, she said, Doug, can you still hear her say, you're never going to be a peacemaker until you're at peace. And that was the crux of it for me. And she knew, I did not tell her, but she knew what I was going through. She had good vision and could understand what I was going through and what I was wrestling with. I guess I gave off enough clues in our conversation, and hence she got what was going on. And she was the first African-American woman bishop of the United Methodist Church, and so she understood what struggle was all about. And so that was over the July 4th holiday and that conference, and I came back home to Alexandria, Virginia, outside of D.C., and my wife and I spent a nice Sunday morning together, went to church, and then we went down into Old Town Alexandria. People know, been there, had a fish sandwich, I remember, and came back, and I went to my piano, and I started singing a song and kind of broke down in tears, and she came out and asked me what was wrong, and I told her. And I told her, I said, I'm gay. And I was waiting for her to go to the kitchen and get the frying pan over my head, but I did not get that. She hugged me and said, I love you. And that began then probably about a 3-month process of us talking, loving each other, and then realizing what this meant. And then I moved out and we both began to heal and began new lives together and still remain happy. She's remarried and has a wonderful daughter. They live in Florida. And, you know, and so it's a story of coming to truth, coming to grips, but also coming to peace internally, and so that I could be a peacemaker in my own life and in my own work and my own ministry, but also about love and redemption and forgiveness and grace and all these kinds of things. And so if anything, my environment, my faith taught me to come out of the closet. My environment growing up as a child didn't make me gay. Are you kidding me? No. And I mean, the same could be said then, well, did your environment, I want to say this to a heterosexual, well, did your environment make you heterosexual? Because our culture is all about heterosexual life, except in terms of just the way our structures are, you know, football players and cheerleaders and, you know, the ads we watch and the TV shows we watch. And so perhaps people are indoctrinated to be heterosexual. Well, of course that's foolish to think that way. But the same applies to a person who's homosexual. It's foolish to think that we have been somehow indoctrinated into this by our environment. No, this is something very inherent in who we are. And I find it interesting in Native American tradition, the Navajo tradition, you know, ancient, right, they celebrated their men and women who were gay. They saw that as a special gift from God. And so other cultures have deemed this to be completely normal. And it's, you know, it's from birth. It's just the way it is.
Now, when we come to all the attention that you have gotten this past summer, or since the announcement was made that you were going to be the first openly gay pastor in the greater Columbus area, the attention was very positive, but I would imagine there had to be some negative. Was there any negative?
Oh, yes. Mainly, not so much publicly. In fact, I haven't seen too many letters to editors in response. There may be some out there that I just haven't seen. The haters track you down on through Facebook and through, you know, social media and through the website and all those kind of things. So, oh, yes, I have a email box full of hate mail. But most of it has been incredibly positive. And some just a little bit of almost like, yeah, what's the big deal? Because it's just seen as, what's the big deal? And so I've had to kind of remind some people sometimes that it is a big deal because it is the first, and it could be taken away from us all over again by this Supreme Court and by legislators that, you know, are on this kind of, I think it's a political kick, you know, to show that they're somehow upstanding and holding the Bible and moral standards and all this kind of thing. When most of them, often, you look at their own personal lives, no one's without sin, right? So it's like, it's always kind of humorous to see what has going on. The former speaker of the state legislature, he was one of the top ones on anti-gay things. Well, look how the trouble he got into. They was embezzling, state dollars. And as well as, doing some fraudulent lobbying fundraising. So, let's look at the sins and the skeletons in our own closets and quit worrying about my life. It's somewhat how I feel about it.
Well, I want to turn to a local issue here, because just to show you how in 2022 it is still a big issue, we had an event at a graduation ceremony back in May, I believe it was the Friday before Memorial Day, in which a gentleman was invited back to one of our local schools here in Marion, River Valley, and he was a distinguished alumni, and he was to speak at graduation. And during that speech, one line out of the speech brought a lot of furor to where it became a national story. It was in the USA Today, NBC News, from this River Valley graduation speech. Now, the line was this, and I quoted here, "Choose a spouse. I also strongly suggest to make sure to choose biblical principles. You know, a male with a female, and a female with a male." That was the line that brought the furor. Are you surprised by that?
By him saying that, or the furor that came behind it?
Well, I guess both. Should that have been at put in a graduation speech, and should there have been such a furor about it to where it became a national news story?
I hate that word "should." Would have I preferred it not to have been in a graduation speech like that? Absolutely. Now, do I blame? Is it fair then to blame, the school leadership for inviting this person? You never know exactly what somebody's going to say when you invite them. And so you're celebrating, a distinguished alumni coming back. And so, in my conference planning work I've done in Washington, you invite someone, you never completely know what they're going to say. So would have I preferred that he had not said that? Yes, of course, because that, to young ears that are going through their own issues, that's incredibly hurtful. So as a result, is that fear acceptable? Yes. That there is what I call holy anger, and there is nothing wrong with being angry and communicating that and, writing, protesting, as long as it's peaceful anger, then, of course. And so he said it, and he stuck his neck out into a very public statement like that, and so he's got to then defend his neck, right? And so, okay, well, what did you mean by that, and was that appropriate? And hopefully it would become a teaching moment for everyone to understand of how that it was extremely hurtful to a lot of people. You know, in this tension that we're in, people show their colors, right? And so you begin to find out, oh, okay, so this person thinks this person thinks that. And so you begin to see where these things come. So I think the Fuhrer is completely accurate, and as long as it's peacefully expressed and lovingly expressed. I mean, I think that's perhaps where I get concerned is when we have folks that don't, excuse me, my clock is going off here in the background, but that we don't communicate that fear in love and in peace. So, I don't know if that answers the question.
Well, I guess the biggest thing that he came under was they wanted him to resign from boards that he was on. I don't believe that happened because the county commissioners stood behind him and said he did not have to resign because he refused to resign. But he was called upon to resign from boards and things of that nature. So that it wasn't just the newspaper articles. It wasn't just the media coverage. It wasn't just protest. It was they wanted him to not do anything anymore.
Right. Now, one of the very strong emails was from a pastor from in this area that called on me to resign immediately from Prince of Peace of Pickerington because of my gay ordination. And so I certainly am well aware of, and I'm not resigning, nor should I resign, and that's up to my congregation and my denomination, my presbytery, you know, who has approved me to be there. So that, I guess maybe that's how I'm going to answer it. So that's up to in the situation that I'm in, that's up to my congregation. If he's on a board of a private, you know, organization, well, that's up to the board. If he's not going to make that decision personally, and that's up to the board. Now, if it's a public situation where you're on, you know, a school board, or you're on, you know, some kind of a commission that the mayor or the governor or something has put you on, well, then that becomes a little bit different. And then that's where people can make their voice heard in a public witness to the elected officials, you know, about calling on resignations. That becomes a little bit, that is part of our public witness, your public role. And ultimately, if it's an elected position, well then, you know, vote them out.
Well, I don't know if he was elected or not, but it was a Board of Developmental Disabilities, and the commissioners who would have had to have made him leave supported him and said he could stay. So that's what happened. So I guess we only have about a minute left here. So basically, in that particular situation, do you feel that he should have resigned or that the commissioners should have made him resign in regard to that comment?
Let me put it this way. I think the commissioners should definitely reevaluate his role on, particularly if it's some kind of a development board, then I think it needs to be significantly reevaluated if this is the appropriate person that's going to be positive for the development of our children and of our community. Yes.
30 seconds left to go. Where do you head from here, Reverend?
I have a church to pastor, and so I'm focused on our congregation and invite everyone to come and join us in worship, and we are going to be continue to be a presence in the Pickerington community and doing the mission of Christ. That's what I'm called to do.
This has been a fascinating conversation. You've got to come back with us when we have more time, and I know you do come to Marion from time to time, so maybe we can get together and do it in person sometime.
That would be great.
Thank you, Reverend.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. The Reverend Douglas Grace, the first openly gay pastor in Greater Columbus, Pickerington as well, where his church is located, the Prince of Peace Presbyterian Church. Very interesting story, the pastor spot coming up next.
From Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Have you heard my interviews with Phyllis Diller here on WWE?